Merry Christmas, everybody. And if you have the chance, Linda is preaching tonight, right? Meditation. Meditation. Okay. All righty. Have you ever heard this line or said this line before? Somebody says to you, or maybe you say it to somebody else, oh, it's Christmas. You gonna get together with your family? And maybe the response you got back or the response you gave was, it's complicated. It's complicated. Or maybe we say something like, well, yeah, I'll get together with my one brother and my sister, and maybe, but not everybody. It's complicated, yeah. Then somebody gets sick. And in those final days with that one particular person, what do you do? I'll tell you what you do. You go in and you sit at their bedside. You maybe sit in an ICU. And all those years, jingle all the way. Oh, no. As you sit in that bedside, by that bedside, or in that ICU, you realize it really wasn't all that complicated. It really wasn't. It was uncomfortable. It was awkward. But it really wasn't complicated. You see, Christmas is that time of year that reminds all of us of three things. There are problems that we cannot solve. How you doing back there, Bear Brandon? Okay, very good. Good to have you here this morning. Good. You know, you remember 15, 20 years ago, there was that gathering. Somebody didn't bring the right thing. Somebody didn't say the right thing. Somebody forgot something. And you've been kind of grumbling about it with that other person for 15 or 20 years, and you can't go back and change it. It happened. There are problems we can't solve. There are people we cannot control. You can't control them. As much as you try, as much as you try to control the circumstances in dealing with them, you realize you can't manage them. And then finally, there are circumstances, there are expectations that we just can't meet. Oh, I know I'm going to get there, and they're going to check out what I'm wearing. They're going to check out how my kids are behaving. They're going to check out what I bring. And it's not spoken, but you get there and you feel judged. Worse than that, you realize those three things up there, and then you can begin to personalize them. You can say, I am that problem that can't be resolved. I keep bringing it up. I keep looking for the end to get my jabs in. I am the person that can't control myself. I want to ignore it. I want to walk by it. But, you know, there's just that. And then finally, I, a lot of times, will put on the expectations in my relationship with them. Well, they should act that way. They should do this. Da-da, da-da, da-da. Worse than that, not only do those problems exist, but I am a part of that problem. In fact, though, if we take the birth narrative seriously, it actually removes our excuses to move from the direction of complicated and uncomfortable and towards resolution with those persons and circumstances that we find ourselves so many times uncomfortable with. We have said that we like that little old saying, you know, Jesus, he's the reason for the season. But as we've explored that over the last 3 weeks, we realize that Jesus, while he is in some ways the reason for the season, in our chaotic, messed up, sinful world, with our sinful lives, you, I, our bosses, our family members, we live such messed up lives that God so loved the world that he showed up that first Christmas. And we are looking at ways that we are the reason for the season because we have benefited in so many ways by Christ coming to this earth. We said Jesus came to this world to bless it, to help people along, to help them be better off than they were. We've said last week that if we're looking for Jesus, we can't look beyond him or we'll miss him. We can't look before him or we'll miss him. But when we come eye to eye with Christ, when we look him straight in the face, it's then and only then that we can really see God's love demonstrated, communicated to us. Last week we said, you know, Jesus said, you know, if you're going to look past me, you're going to miss me. If you're going to look before me, you're going to miss me. But I, look at me, Philip, remember? He said, look at me. I'm as close to the Father as you will ever get. The one sent into the world for the world. And today we want to talk about the third reason, and that is Jesus came to this world to remove your excuses and to remove my excuses in life. At Christmas time, we celebrate God drawing near. In Matthew, he quoted Isaiah saying, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him, they're right this time, Emmanuel. You got the notes. You're on the second page top. All right. Matthew, quoting Isaiah, said, the virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him, Emmanuel. There you go. There you go. Which means God with us. More precisely, it means God is with us. Now, this is important. Whenever God renames someone or gives them a nickname, it pointed to a purpose of God that would be fulfilled in that person. So Jesus was born. He was told by Mary that he would be called Jesus. In this place, we see him being called Emmanuel, God with us. It's pointed to the purpose that God would use a person to fulfill his purposes through that person's life. And what we find as the story unfolds is that Jesus is the living illustration of God with us. God's purpose and values were demonstrated through Jesus, and he came and lived among us. So if that's the case, what becomes awkward and uncomfortable is this. If God came to be with us, we lose our excuse to remain distant from other people simply because we say, oh, it's complicated, or oh, it's awkward. People whose dysfunction and insecurity and sins differ from mine, oh, that makes me feel uncomfortable. That makes me feel awkward. Philip Yancey, a pretty famous Christian writer, writes, Christians get very angry towards other Christians who sin differently than we do. Christians get angry when they see other people sin in ways that are different than theirs. I want you to think about the last time you really got jacked up. You got amped up over somebody else's wrongdoing, somebody else's sin. And then you sit back and you look at your own sin. I still haven't heard an amen. I didn't hear an amen. Don't lie. You do it all the time, don't you? Oh, I can't believe that they did that. Oh, don't worry about that. We'll put it to the side. I even have that problem. And I'm a professional Christian. All right, I'm the pastor, all right? You would think that as I'm looking at the sins of others and I look at my own, they should at least be even, but I want to play down mine. I don't know which way the scale goes, but, you know, I want to play down mine. But, boy, I can find reason to be critical of others. In fact, Yancey wrote, we get angry with non-Christians whose sin is different from our own. And yet, they look at us and think, well, I don't ascribe to your definition of sin to begin with. During Jesus' life, his most caustic criticisms were reserved for the self-righteous. He had all kind of patience with sinners, but not the self-righteous. That was a whole different story. He'd tell them, you can't get so self-righteous that you pass by all of your sin. He knew that self-righteousness was really a simple act of a lack of self-awareness. The birth of Jesus, the fact that God came down to dwell with us, should make all of us painfully and shamefully self-aware. We should wake up every day and be self-aware that we have so much in common, even with people we dislike and people who don't like us. And we should always be aware that everybody else, has the same needs and the same desires and the same fears that we do. There is no room for self-righteousness as we walk this earth. And the self-righteousness in us comes out evidencing our self-awareness. Awareness that in fact the reason that I do not decide to move in one direction will make life awkward. The reasons aren't really, well, it's Christmas time, and there I've got to be nice to everybody. The reason is that God came to this earth and dwelt among us and rubbed shoulders with us. And he was nothing, nothing like us. We realize at Christmas time, when God came to this earth, all those things that we now hold as excuses against other people are really shattered, because God has given us the model of what it is like to come near. And the more that I'm aware of God's movement towards me, the more I realize how much I need to move towards others because of what God has done. Really, the things that hold us back from trying to make resolution with others isn't, it's uncomfortable. It's simply an excuse. God wanted us to know him. Even though we messed up our lives, we've sinned, our lives are chaotic, but he took the time to come to us. He modeled the path for us. God put on personality and personhood and made the connection that we might know our Heavenly Father. And the more aware of God's grace and mercy towards me, the more inclined I should be to extend grace and mercy to you. Because of God's grace to me through the birth of his Son, he has removed our excuses not to extend mercy and grace to one another. Even though your insecurity is expressed differently than mine, the more aware I am of the things that God is working on me, has not yet changed in me, my insecurities, my dysfunctions, my prejudice, my sin. Honey, did I get them all? Oh, she left. Okay. The less offended by and uncomfortable I should be with what God is yet to change in you. And when it surfaces in me, while I'm uncomfortable, and because it is complicated, it is the reason why we celebrate Christmas. God came to be with us. And as uncomfortable, as awkward as it was for him, he came. He shattered our excuses to avoid complicated and awkward and uncomfortable, because he came first. Very quickly, because I gave Dale back there so much to read. You ready, Dale? Here's John. John, who was with Jesus from the beginning. He didn't write the Bible. We all think, oh, they just 66 books, boom. He wrote to document experiences that he had with Jesus. And all the gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, they were all real people who felt the same experiences that Jesus did, that you do. He felt it all. He smelt it. He heard it. He stood back in a crowd and held Mary as she watched her son be crucified. He, John, lost hope. You were looking for something. You feel like you lost hope. John's your guy. He raced to the tomb because the ladies told him it was empty. Peter gets there second, John gets there first, but John doesn't go in because, I don't know, maybe he was afraid it was a tomb. He's hopeless. And then he meets his resurrected rabbi. He has breakfast with him on the beach. He gets old. He survives Vestivius, an emperor of Rome. He survived Titus as he built a siege around the walls of Jerusalem. He will find out that Peter and Paul are both executed. He is an old man at an unimaginably horrible time. And John pens these words. He condenses God down to a single word, a word that today is supposed to be about. Anybody want to give it a guess? It's four letters. There you go. You had the answer. Okay. We'll erase the first one. Okay. Love. Even though nothing lovely was happening in his world, he still defined God as love. John's an old man. He says, they say to him, "You've told us the accounts of Jesus' birth hundreds of times." And when he begins to tell them one last time the narrative of Jesus' life, he begins the birth narrative. But he doesn't begin it with angels and shepherds and no room at the inn. He knew that story backward and forth. He took care of Mary the rest of her life. So you can imagine the conversations and the stories they heard and shared. You'd ask the same questions. But as he begins his gospel, he doesn't start there. Rather, he begins with what is considered a greater miracle. Just in time, when things could not possibly get any worse, when it seemed like God would not answer our prayers, God acted. He didn't act as we expected him to, or the way we prayed he would. We prayed for centuries that God would send a warrior king. But God, he kind of took two stones in a windstorm, and he began this uncreated creator to pound those rocks one against the other, until a spark came out and lit an area of fuel below. And it burst into, from a spark to a small flame to a full fire. It was amazing. And we'd say, "Okay, John, that's okay, that's okay." The Word became flesh. "It's the only way I know how to describe it," John would say. God became one of us. Though he had nothing in common with us, he was so superior than the rest of us. He considers the Word became flesh and stuck around just long enough to say hello to everybody, to get his gift, to check his watch, and then excuse himself. Y'all gonna buy that? Are you all gonna buy that? The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. And we have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from... Hey, you changed it on me. Go back to the first one. That's the one I want. No, come back down. The Word became flesh. One more. And made his dwelling among us. He stuck around just long enough to say hello to everybody, to get his gift, to check his watch, and then excuse himself. After all, he wasn't really one of our people, and we weren't one of his. It's complicated. The Word became flesh, and he dwelt among us. He lived with us. He traveled with us. He got bruises and calluses like we do. He fished with us and camped with us. And sitting around those nighttime campfires, he smelt like smoke, just like we did. He dressed and laughed and wept with us. And for 3 years, he did that. And he was nothing like us. And we were not like him. He kept telling us, it will not end well in Jerusalem. And while we're like, why are you going? He seemed to be intent on making it to Jerusalem. And you know what? To make it on time to Jerusalem, they went through Samaria. It was quicker. But they all kind of, the disciples, kind of huffed and puffed and said, oh, Samaria, we're not going to be welcome there. He sends a couple ahead of them to see if they can find room, someplace they could stay. And those guys come back and say, no, they're not going to let us in. In the first century, hospitality was of high value. No motels, just little villages, and you stayed where you were offered. And Jesus and his crew had nowhere to go. And John is telling us this story now, kind of half embarrassed. He said, you know, we came back, me and my brother John, James came back, and we said, Lord, you just say the word, and we will call down fire from God and burn up those cities, every man, woman, and child. And he looked at us and he rolled his eyes. And a few days later, he'd die on a cross for the same stinking Samaritan. Who wouldn't give him a place to stay? When I read that, God came near. He closed the distance. He lived comfortably among us, even though it was extremely uncomfortable. And I read that. I say, I want to be more like that. I can go into places and come in contact with people that I'm uncomfortable with. I feel awkward around. I'm an adult, though, and I can laugh and I can smile and I can get through those things. But Jesus, he didn't need to go through it, probably didn't want to go through it, but he did it, and he did it for you and for me. And he invites us to go into an awkward, uncomfortable, complicated world with relatives and friends and people we just sometimes don't want to be around. But he invites you. And if perfection didn't keep its distance, how can I? How can? How can?